Spirit Radio Podcasts. The best of the morning show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
Did you know that last week several thousand students were sitting some of their leaving certificate exams? These are the students that chose to sit their leaving cert rather than take their calculated grades, or indeed to just sit some of their subjects. But probably a lot of you didn't even know that that was happening. Well, earlier on in the week, I chatted to psychotherapist Maria Dowling, and she was giving us her thoughts as to exactly what these young people might have gone through and why she thinks they deserve to be really commended.
They finished last Friday. They started on November 16th, which is something that has escaped the attention of the general public. And I'm heartened that you're drawing attention to it on Spirit Radio, because I think we must commend these young people, because what a year it has been. You know, I mean, we all have dreaded our leaving certificate, and it's something that stays with all of us in our memory because it's so difficult. So much is dependent on the grades. And so think about September 2019 when they came in to what is their sixth year and anticipating exams in June, and what a year it has been, a global pandemic.
And the thing is, Maria, usually when the leaving cert is happening as normal, there's almost a feeling that the whole country is behind all the students that are sitting it. And especially for those, I mean, it's a long time ago now for me, but I still remember it as it being one of the most difficult set of exams I've ever had to sit, and just how challenging it was. And that was at the best of times, but of course it's a different story for these students.
And they have been on a roller coaster, in that I think they had the additional stress, and again, of course, I'm coming at it from the point of view, psychological point of view, as a psychotherapist is, as a society, we were very stressed, we were very frightened. And you know, most of us remember after the mocks, you come into the springtime. And that's when everyone's getting really stressed about exams. But at that point, the schools closed. And so there were 61,000 candidates for the class of 2020 leaving certificate. And suddenly, school is closed, you're out of school. And how many of them realised that you're actually out of school permanently? They never went back.
Yeah, that rite of passage.
That rite of passage, graduation, they never got any of that.
It ended so abruptly, yeah.
Abruptly. And if you think about the endings and the importance of these endings for young people, and there was a grief in that there are peers they never saw again, you know, that maybe weren't their friends, but they were used to being in classes, teachers, but also the place that they had been for so many years. And then they moved to online and the adapting to that. They were hearing then that their exams were going to be deferred. And a lot of them really, I know because I've worked with a lot of people who are kind of casualties of this year, and they put in the work for the exams. And then in May, the exams were cancelled. And this actually was quite traumatic for a lot of people, where they said, my eye was on the prize of sitting the exams and of really pulling it together for that. So they weren't turning in essays and doing class tests. Some didn't even do the mocks, and they were afraid of the calculated grades.
And there was such a season, Maria, people might remember, where students didn't really know how it was going to work, what was going to happen. And it was such a season of not knowing, and they were stuck in limbo. But for those who decided to say, okay, I'm going to sit the exams in November, what sort of a challenge do you think it's been for them?
Well, I mean, for them, now think about it, 61,000 in the class of 2020. My statistic is 2,820 are the number who said that they would go for the November-December exams. And that's because, and I know it's very controversial, but when the results came out in September, they were unhappy. And they did not feel that those results were reflective of their true ability. And so can you imagine the roller coaster of deferred leaving, sort of cancelled leaving, books put away, and then suddenly in September, you're pulling those books back out, and you probably haven't looked at them since the start of May. And at this time, you have no school, you have no teachers, and often they had no peers either, because their friends weren't doing the exam. It's a small number came back. And that's why I actually really admire them, because rather than just really saying I'm beaten and I'm done for and I'm worn out and this year is now extending into the winter, and actually, even though they finished the exams last Friday, they don't get their results until February, and they're still the class of 2020.
I know, so their whole experience has been dragged out. It's so long.
All the way along.
I'm sure, Maria, it's something that you work with clients a lot on, because on the one hand, of course, it's been a huge challenge for these young people, but on the other, I'd imagine that perhaps there's positives that this group of young people can take, just in terms of their resilience. What would you say about that?
Now, and that's where I actually found, I love, and I mean, just to give you a scripture verse that we know well of Romans 5, we know we rejoice in our sufferings. Well, I don't. It's very difficult, and nobody does at the time in suffering. But suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. And to be honest with you, it's a psychological principle. When you in this life, we will have a lot of trouble, suffering will come, and there'll be disappointments and betrayals for many people. And for these young people to say, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to lie down and just say I'm beaten, or am I going to get up, get out the books, and persevere, which is what they did? And I believe that whether or not it reaps the rewards of getting the grades for them, they have built something in their character that in time also produces hope for them. Yeah. And I've seen this. I'm primarily a trauma therapist. You know, there's all different areas that psychotherapists work in. But I spent many years working with trauma. And I don't know, Wendy, did you ever see the movie Castaway?
Yeah.
Tom Hanks, right? Stuck on an island. There's nothing you can do. You can't get off it. And I use this often when I'm working with clients. And I say to them, sometimes the only thing you can do is stay breathing, stay alive, stay well physically. But you've got to watch the water, and you've got to ask yourself, is my opportunity to turn what I'm in here yet? Because you never know what might come in on the tide. Now, what came in on the tide for these students who were disappointed, and there are a small number of them, but relative to the 61,000, is I can sit the exam. And they embrace that. And I think they should be commended for that.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
We continued our Christmas countdown series with the guests that we usually discuss American politics with, but we left that serious stuff aside this week when we chatted to NUIG law lecturer and political analyst Larry Donnelly, and he started off sharing with me a Christmas memory from his childhood.
I suppose the one that really stands out, and you know, it resonates with me now as a parent, is the torture that my brother and I inflicted on our parents. I think that we used to wake up on Christmas morning about 3:30 in the morning and running down to open up all of the presents as fast as we possibly could. And then the problem was by about 8 o'clock in the morning, my brother and I would be back sound asleep and my parents desperately trying to rouse us for the day. It was great fun at the time, but I just think to look back now and think, God, my parents must have been ready to kill us.
And what hour of the morning do you think you're going to be woken up by your boys on Christmas Day?
Well, this is the thing. We've sort of said after 7 o'clock, give us till 7 o'clock. And we have a tactic that probably puts us down in the bad parents group. But the tactic is to let him stay up as long as he wants to on Christmas Eve in the hopes that he will sleep for as long as possible on Christmas morning.
You got to keep your fingers crossed, Larry. Well, my parents used to make sure that there was a stocking filled at the end of our bed. Santa Claus left, you know, chocolates and sweets. So I was probably eating that at 4 o'clock in the morning. That might have held me off for another half an hour. But sure, you break all the rules at Christmas. That's what it's about. Tell us a little bit about a highlight of 2020 for you, Larry.
You know, there's been a number of highlights, but I think the one that I think has been, you know, the one mixed blessing of this situation has been spending so much time at home and getting to be around my family an awful lot. Usually I'm down in Galway during the week, and I'm back here in Wicklow at the weekends. Because of the pandemic, I've been able to spend a tremendous amount of time here at home, and it's been great every day to see my son after school. It's just really, really nice. Whereas I used to really kind of ache even going away on Mondays and Tuesdays and then coming back on a Thursday or Friday and missing out on so much. So it's been great to be around.
Yeah, and it's time that you don't get back, but you'll cherish forever.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So it's been magical in that sense. There's been an awful lot to get us down. I think there's been an awful lot bad. We know people who've contracted COVID, people who've been sick, and it's a horrible thing. But I think if there's one thing it's brought out for a lot of us, is making us realize what really matters. And what really matters isn't necessarily the holiday or the glitzy trip or the nights out, et cetera. What really matters is those close to you.
Okay, what about a low light then from 2020 for you?
A low light, I suppose, you know, I could look at it in a different way. A low light has been, you know, not having the interaction, not seeing people, missing, you know, not being able to go into a classroom and teach my students.
Because have you been Zooming most of your lectures, Larry?
What's that?
Have you been Zooming most of your lectures, or it's all been virtual, yeah?
Yeah, Zooming all of them. And it's, you know, anybody who's a teacher at any level, and one of the best things about teaching is the buzz out of the classroom and the buzz out of being there and seeing people engage. Or on the other hand, knowing when to pivot. When students are falling asleep or losing, you knowing when to pivot. Trying to do all of that in an online context just isn't the same. And I think I've missed that tremendously. And I'm really hoping, for all the sake of all the students who are really missing out on the university experience as it is now, that we can get back to normal for the next academic year and they have that college experience. I think it's so important, both in terms of education, but also in terms of personal formation. So that's one thing that's been really missing.
Yeah, it's been hard on everybody, but especially I really feel for first-year students where they've missed that whole, all the different rites of passage. What about a hope you have for 2021, Larry?
I hope that we emerge from this. I hope that you know, the vaccine rollout works, and I hope that people take it up and that we're able to move on and not be talking about COVID-19 all the time, that we can get back to, I suppose, some sense of normality. But at the same time, that we don't lose some of the lessons that I think a lot of us have learned in this difficult time. And I think it may sound corny, but really, I mean, the overarching wish is peace, good health, and prosperity for people. I think that's what it boils down to at the end of the day.
That's a proper Christmas message there, Larry, for sure. And what about something you'd recommend for us this Christmas? It could be anything, you know, a tradition or a gift or a Christmas Day idea.
It's a good question. I mean, I know what you know, in terms of what we do on Christmas Day, we'll be up to we'll probably visit with, we'll stay within the household rules, but we'll go up into Lara, into the Wicklow Mountains, and I think walking around there at Christmas time, of course, if you live in the locality and you're allowed to travel, et cetera, with all those caveats, I think going for really nice walks wherever you are. And taking that time out in and around Christmas, I think there's nothing better than that kind of cold, crisp winter day where you go out for a nice long walk with, again, the people who are close to you. And then preferably afterwards, you might have a cold beverage or two to enjoy and wind down from the walk.
Yeah, sounds good to me. So are you going to be celebrating Christmas at home this year, or are you going to be doing any cooking?
I probably won't do any of the cooking. I'll do as much of the helping as I can.
The chopping and the peeling.
That's it. I do actually do most of the cooking in this house, but when it comes to those kind of traditional meals, I'm just not the best at it. And that's not an excuse. I'm just really not that good. So I do most of the cooking during the year. But at Christmas time, I get something of a free pass, and I'm kind of the designated kitchen helper.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
Probably over the Christmas season, it might be a time where you or your children are spending a little bit more time online. So how do you protect yourself online? Well, we chatted to Graham Mulhern of Be Secure Online, and he was giving us just some practical tips. And he started off just by talking about privacy settings and some of the things that you can do to protect yourself.
We need to approach privacy on our social media and gaming platforms, and, for example, use VPN when shopping. Just simple things that we can do for almost the price of a cup of coffee, and just move towards privacy settings on everything that we do, which is really easy to do and would make a huge change. But the public has to see change here. It's a bit like the drink driving campaigns that took 40 years to be effective. The public will be sluggish, but in the meantime, the criminals are at work. This is not exaggerated. The public now needs to step up and do some simple things for themselves, because government is way behind.
So in terms of just some of the things that people should be aware of, different scams and online things that are out there at the moment, what are the big ones we should keep our eyes open for, Graham?
All the usual. But in terms of tooling up, this particular time of year, I mean, they say in the gaming environment, do not go searching for V-Bucks outside, say, Fortnite. We have tested, for example, the first 10 companies that come up in Google when you get sort of generate V-Bucks. and the first 10 companies all came with a health warning. I mean, Google should be chasing that sort of thing down. I mean, Google has lost its shape altogether. You type in any word today and Google does almost nothing to restrain it. For purchasing, along with our common sense, which is really important, for purchasing, I would always recommend that people consider putting the front-end security, like a VPN, on their phone and on their laptop at home, and only search on sites that are secure, only buy with VPN. Don't save your debit card for efficiency into your browser. I mean, these are simple steps that you can take. Switch off in-app purchasing. Common sense all the way. And obviously we need to be on the lookout for scams and try and shop with trusted brands. But I know that's up against pressure because people want to locally shop, and a lot of local shops have only just started really seriously getting into the online world. So it's difficult for them to have the kind of online trust parameters established.
Yeah, and so it's looking for that little lock symbol at the top left-hand corner to know that it's a secure site. And I got a text, for example, the other day, Graham, saying, you have to pay postage on something that has something or other that's come in. And when I Googled the exact text, of course, it came up straight away that it was a scam. So I didn't click the link. So that can work
common
too.
Common sense.
Yeah, I know. But in the common madness, sense. You can forget common sense. What about... No.
VPN is really important. Can I stress to people that VPN is I know it's not perfect, but it is an undiscovered gem in the drive for safety at home, and especially it protects gaming environments and debit cards.
And how does it work? How do you use VPN when you're out and about?
Well, VPN works on mobile as well. So you should never, for example, use your own credit card. Now, this doesn't apply so much on your phone. You should never boohoo in a coffee shop, for example. Why would you allow and use the free Wi-Fi? So use VPN to disguise your phone's address on the internet, and then the hackers can't get at you. I mean, that's a huge win. Like for 50 quid, for the amount of money that some people spend on their per annum, that is for a whole family, that's a tiny proportion to keep yourself safe.
Yeah, to keep yourself safe, especially when you're going in and out of so many places where there's free Wi-Fi and all that sort of stuff, and your details are just open. What about just advice for parents in the lead up to Christmas? And, you know, it could be a time as well where some children are getting their first mobile phone at Christmas and all that sort of stuff, and spending more time on social media and online during the school holidays. What's your advice there, Graham?
Well, there's one that people aren't going to like very much, but a simple one, and you get a lot of people saying, hey, Graham, I'm not great on tech, along with that other great one, I swear to God, Graham, I think the internet is listening to me. But for people maybe venturing into their first phone, here's a great piece of advice. It's really simple but might be expensive. Don't buy a cheap phone. Buy the same phone as you've got. So if you have an iPhone 8, get an iPhone 8, 9 or 10 for your kid, because then at least you haven't bought a cheap phone, at least it's the same phone as you've got, and that's a lot less learning to do, and you're already familiar with it. And then go straight to screen time, which is in settings, and set them on, and hide the password, which is all there, and you can all look that up on YouTube. But get your kid the same phone as you've got, so you're not struggling if she hands it over, and to set up parental control. And the second you get it, put on screen time. And then the third piece, which is very simple, and this, no technology involved here, an hour a day or whatever you're comfortable with, 90 minutes a day, and the kid has to come to you and ask, Mom, can I have some more time on my phone? It's a privilege, not a right.
And that's something that's really important to remember. It's a privilege, not a right. Will you be having designated screen-free hours over the Christmas holidays in your house, Graham?
Oh, absolutely. My children are sick of me appearing on the radio because it puts extra, and my business in general, puts extra pressure on them. But and the reason for that is very simple. We want Jack to be a very bright boy and not a dull boy. Variety is the spice of life, and sitting down 6 days in a row doing 10 hours online is not winning. And it's as easy as telling your child to look you in the face when they're talking to you and to get up and go outside. You don't need any technology. You just need to tell them because I said so.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
Earlier on in the week, I spoke to Professor Jack Lambert. He's a professor of infectious diseases at the Mater Hospital and the UCD School of Medicine. And Professor Lambert told me why he thought that going into another lockdown in January wasn't a good idea. And he talked about us really needing to learn to live with the virus. But he started off just explaining his thoughts on where the virus is at right now and how we should be managing it.
This is a very, very infectious virus, okay? And there's no way we can get the virus to zero. We can just minimize the number of cases, do the best we can to do all the appropriate COVID prevention strategies till the vaccine comes, and the vaccine will be coming, so that's great, but it's going to be another 6 to 12 months before you can roll out 4 million people getting vaccinated, two doses of a vaccine. So if you look back, you know, before we went into lockdown, there was like 1,400 cases, so that was a cause for alarm. But the very next day, we went down to 777. We've been kind of hovering 300, 400, 500, 200, 300, 400, because the virus continues to circulate in the community. It continues to circulate in the border between the north and the south. You know, it's a very infectious virus. We need to, so the message is, it's a very infectious virus. How do you prevent respiratory viruses? You wear a mask, you social distance, you limit, you know, visitation. But my opinion is, you don't go into lockdown. You don't scare people. The numbers are going up and down. You actually tell people what they can do right while we're waiting for the vaccine to come along.
You are connected to a white paper that has been written. People can look at it on the website covidrecovery.ie. Tell us a little bit about why this paper was put together and briefly, Dr. Lambert, just what it's trying to say.
Right. Well, I think the issue is that the WHO says a lockdown is the last resort, okay? And for other pandemics like influenza, you don't use lockdown. You use all the prevention methods that we're talking about, you know, face masks, et cetera, et cetera. So this document was not put together by me. It was put together by a bunch of GPs and other people in the community, and I kind of supported them in some of their wording and some of their thoughts. But it basically, you know, talks about, you know, we can't just use numbers, PCR tests. We can't chase numbers. We actually have to keep the numbers down, what you need to do to flatten the curve. So number one, it talks about that. Number two, it talks about all the other consequences of lockdown, you know, that people are suffering in the community, their economic suffering, their psychiatric suffering. What can we do to continue all the other services while we live with COVID? So it's a living with COVID document, really. And I just think I think that's what the government says they want to do. They put out months ago, let's live with COVID. And then it seems like the very next day, we were talking about lockdown again because the numbers were increasing. I think we should be focusing on how we keep the numbers down. And even going into the Christmas and New Year, WHO says, if you're going to be with families, wear a mask. Now, it seems a little artificial, but if you're going to have gatherings of significant number of family members from different families, I'd rather wear a mask and be with them than be at home and be with nobody. So I just think that there's really important messages that have been coming out, not necessarily from the government, but from other groups. The white paper's representative of, you know, how do we live with COVID? We need to deal with it just like we do with flu. You know, prepare the ICUs, prepare the hospitals, you know, do all the right things in the community to keep the numbers down. So I think this is not going to go away. We're now 9-10 months into this epidemic, and we're probably going to be another 6-12 months of a different lifestyle living with COVID. But it's good that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I just think we can't let our guard down. We have to actually enhance our COVID precautions and have messages going out to the Irish public to do the right thing. And I think they will do the right thing if we tell them what the right thing to do is, rather than saying, oh, they're going to get drunk at Christmas, they're going to congregate, they're going to break the rules, and we're going to be back in lockdown, the numbers are going to surge in the ICU. Of course, that can happen, and it has happened in other countries, but in other countries it hasn't. So let's look for the best, you know, the best outcome rather than think about the worst outcome.
What about that, just that you touched on there, just the kind of ICU and hospital beds, and people might have seen Dr. Lambert footage of ambulances lined up in Northern Ireland and they're kind of at capacity. How are we faring here in Irish hospitals, and how will we manage if there is another surge?
Well, okay, this is what if this happened? Should I think, look, we had a surge in the springtime and we were pressed, but we managed, okay? Now, we've never had a surge in the autumn. The numbers of, you know, I mean, the government mentions, oh, we've got 30 in the ICUs, we've got 35 in the ICUs, and my neighbours think that that means that the Mater Hospital ICU is overwhelmed. That is cumulative. All ICU beds in the whole country have maximum in the autumn had between 35 and 55 people, but there's 20-plus ICUs. That means one or two people in each ICU, maybe more in the border counties where they're, you know, up in Letterkenny. But the numbers of COVID cases in ICUs has been very low because we've done well in the autumn. We've done well so far. So I just think we have to focus on continuing to do well to prevent becoming Northern Ireland, to prevent, you know, coming some of the countries that are America. We can either stay in lockdown or we can do the right thing. But if the ICU numbers do start to increase, that is going to be a sign that there's many, many more cases in the community, that the virus is getting out of control. And I think that should be used as a trigger for enhanced precautions. But in the meantime, I think it's beholden on the Irish public to absolutely, you know, wear a mask, hand wash, and it's not been done. It's not been done.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
One thing is for sure is that this Christmas is going to be different to any other. And one of the things that might be difficult, well, it's hard enough for us adults, isn't it, to change our expectations of what we usually expect. But how do we manage our children's expectations? You know, children who are wondering, why are we not doing this tradition this year? Or how come we're not seeing Uncle John and Auntie Mary this year? So Katrina started off explaining about the best way to start having that conversation with the whole family so you can best manage those expectations.
Regardless of the age of your children or whatever, the important thing is for the parents to sit down together on their own, and especially, you know, the person who is the one who is doing the bulk of the cooking and all that kind of thing, you know, and for the two parents to sit down together and decide what can and can we not take on. And then with that in the back of their minds, then sit down and have your family conference if you think you need to do it, depending on the ages of your children, obviously. And, you know, just listen to them, because they have to express disappointment, frustration, or, you know, ideas that they may have as to, can we Zoom this person? Can we go meet this person for coffee? Can we meet this person for dinner? Whatever. And just get all the ideas out so that everybody gets heard. Note, I would encourage you not to make any decisions at this point, just to let everybody share what they would like, ideally speaking. And then
you see what's practical and say, okay, that's what you'd like. But
okay, that is what you would like. And you also get to hear what's important, because you might have a sense that, well, I know my children would love this and my children would love that. But, you know, maybe just have a listen to them. Maybe you're absolutely right. Maybe you know them through and through. But they might, you know, have some scary that they really want to go for a walk in the local park with Uncle John and Auntie Sheila. And, you know, just maybe to kind of take that on board and see how much is that a possibility, or is that just something that's kind of been thrown out. But at least everybody gets to be heard, and you can have a look at what you think might work for you and what might not. And, you know, just realise that every cloud has a silver lining. You know, it may be disappointing that you can't have all the people that you normally have for dinner, but it also means you don't have to cook. that much.
Yeah, you got to cook less. How do you manage that where you have children who and adults too, because a lot of us are disappointed too, where you have specific Christmas traditions, whether it's that's when you get to see these sets of cousins or whatever, and things can't happen that way this year. What's the best way of just managing that kind of disappointment that children will have over some of those things?
Yes, well, one of the things that I've heard, different families doing is that I've heard of having a Zoom present opening, so that, you get everybody on Zoom and you can open your presents. Now, that would entail dropping presents off beforehand, maybe in a day or two beforehand, drop them off, and are meeting up in the local park and exchanging presents there and opening up presents. Also, I have some people, I know one family who have decided, well, their children are small enough and they're actually not going to do a traditional Christmas dinner, but what they're going to do is go round and visit various other family members for coffee or afternoon tea or something other like that. And so it does mean a lot of sitting down and chatting with the people that you would normally meet and kind of see, can we get together on Christmas Eve? Can we get together a couple of us maybe? I think we're allowed to have three households together. So see if you can meet in groups of three households all around Christmas time. It doesn't have to be everybody all together on the one day. And, you can kind of spread the love, spread the joy over a number of days. And who knows, you may even get to sit down and chat to somebody that you normally wouldn't get to chat with because there's so many other people around.
Yeah, and there might be a silver lining in that regard. Katrina, I love the idea of just having the family meeting that you mentioned where everybody talks about their wants and then you figure out, well, what's possible. After your children especially express their wants and their needs, do you then kind of take a pause and talk to your spouse about it and come back with your decision together, or what's the best kind of next step?
Precisely, you've got it in one. Yeah, that you can, to do that, maybe before you get back to your children, if somebody's had an idea, well, could we Zoom in for dinner with this person or that person or the other person, you could give people a ring and say, look, we're thinking of having our Christmas dinner at this time, or would that suit you if you had your dinner in your house at that time and we could Zoom in together and literally have a virtual meal all together? So you'd probably need to chat and set some things up and then have another family meeting, and you can come back and say, we thought the idea that you had, John, was brilliant, and we've rung your auntie and she's totally on for meeting us for a chat in the local park, or we're going to go over and visit X, Y, and Z or whatever, so that then your children hear. And even if it's something that cannot be done, to say, well, we did ring somebody so-and-so and we asked them and it's not going to suit them because. Now, there would be a disappointment there, but at least, they understand. It's not that it was said no and we don't care. We tried, we gave it a go at trying to work it out, and it's not going to work that way, but we might be able to do something different instead.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
Celebrity chef Nevin Maguire was one of our Christmas countdown guests earlier this week, and as well as giving us some tips for cooking the perfect turkey, he started off by sharing with us one of his memories from his childhood at Christmas time.
So I'm from a family of nine, and I remember waking up early every Christmas morning, being really, really excited. And my dad, God rest him, when he was alive, and my mum, we'd all go down, the nine of us, he'd knock on the door where our lovely toys from Santa were, and he'd knock a few times and he'd say, oh God, there's someone there, there's no one there, or something like that. So we were really excited and nervous, and I remember whenever I got my toys, which I was always very grateful for, but my name was spelled wrong. So it wasn't N-E-V-E-N, it was N-E-V-I-N, and I said, does Santa not know how to spell my name? And that's definitely a fantastic memory. We were so excited. We were always awake at the crack of dawn. And, we have a big family. There's nine of us, five boys, four girls in our family. Santa was very, very good to us. So we were very grateful.
Yeah, a lot of presents under that Christmas tree and excitement. I'm sure the twins now, Nevin, this year will have you up at 5 o'clock in the morning or something like that on Christmas Day.
You know, that's the magical side to Christmas. You know, for me, it's all about family and food. And with the twins, Conor and Lucia, they're 8 now. They'll be 9 in February, so they will. But they're just so excited. And we have the elves coming every night, and their little monkeys are just destroying the place with stuff. But it's the lovely innocence and the excitement. And you know, to see how excited they are about it. So that's the magic side of Christmas, though it is. Just a family, just keeping things, I suppose, this year will be very low-key. Just we'll be able to enjoy it all together, please God.
Yeah.
Magical, isn't it?
I know, folks, it's trying to just see the season through children's eyes, I think, will help us get through the more difficult times. Give us a highlight of 2020 for you, Nevin.
The highlight for me, definitely, if I look from my kind of videos and cooking and the engagement from people going back to cooking, the interaction I got from people have kept me going, the support, the encouragement, the good wishes, you know, the interest in food. And I think cooking together as a family, just reconnecting with food, Wendy, definitely. Personally, my personal highlight would be just having time with the family, which is fantastic. And then another one, I'm probably going on a wee bit, but winning the cookbook of the year for the midweek meals, which was fantastic. And it just connected with people. But I think it's about people reconnecting with food and enjoying what's good about, you know, we've great ingredients in Ireland, and spending time in the kitchen with their family. That's the greatest gift we can give our children, to enjoy food, I think so. Yeah.
What about a low light of 2020, Nevin?
Definitely closing the restaurant. Yeah. I remember, was it a week or a few days before St. Patrick's Day, I brought the staff in. It was a Sunday evening. I was actually very emotional. We said, okay, we're going to close. It's coming down the line. And just to tell them to look after one another, that this isn't goodbye, this is good luck and take care of each one. So that was really tough. And then to go out and meet your guests. They're here for a special occasion, so you don't want to put a damper on their night.
Yeah, because when people are coming to MacNeen House, a lot of the time, I know, and I've been, you know, it's booked in advance, it's for a special occasion. It's really something you can be looking forward to for months on end. So it's so difficult. It's not just like a normal night out in a restaurant.
Yeah, you're right. And people, like, you know, they come and they travel and they plan it, and it's such a big event. And, you know, like tonight now when we reopen, I think we have about 52 people booked. So there'll be lots of special occasions and we treats for people. And you want to make their night a special night, and, you know, just to go out and welcome them and thank them and say hello and, you know, just make sure that they've enjoyed their experience. So we have to, you know, be professional and be warm and kind and just give them a memorable experience. You're absolutely right. So, yeah. That was definitely the low light for me, was having to close just before St. Patrick's Day. But just, yeah, we are where we are, you know yourself.
I know. Well, let's talk about, have you got a good hope for 2021 then?
Yeah, I definitely hope that, you know, with the whole vaccine coming down the line, that will just kind of help things and just make that we'll go back to a little bit of normality. I think there's good things that will come out of this, that we've had more family time, that we go back to nature, we enjoy the outdoors, you know. And I'm speaking personally myself, like, I was on the road too much. Like, I've been to Dublin kind of 3 times since March, you know, for work purposes. Like, I was up every week, nearly twice a week. So I've learned what I can do at home personally, and that I can be there for my customers. So I think 2021, you know, we're all kind of going to put this year behind us. We'll never forget it, but we'll want to forget it. And we can just move on with some positivity, because we have a great country, we have great people. And I think the Irish community, they support one another. And that's very, very special. And I think that's a very unique thing. We're just very trying to be together and support one another and help one another. So 2021, I'm hoping that will be a better year for each and every one of us. And and people will still be cooking at home.
And the cooking that we've been doing at home, we'll keep that up. What about, have you got a Christmas Day tradition, Nevin, that you do in your family that you can share with us, might give us some inspiration?
Yeah, well, I suppose we have a couple of traditions. One thing we always do is we love to go to Mass, to be true for which. And when my mum and dad was alive, we used to go to midnight Mass at 12 o'clock when it was midnight. Now I think this year it's gone to 7 o'clock Christmas Eve. So I'm going to be kind of preparing the food Christmas Eve. So we're actually going to go at 12 o'clock, because, you know, it's going to be a difficult time now for churches and managing the numbers and that. And we're very lucky the church is just literally maybe 2 minutes from here. So I think we'll go to Mass, and then we'll go down and say a little prayer at my mum and dad's grave, and my wife Amelda, who lost her mum last year. So I think it's a time you think of other people. You know, it's always a kind of a happy time, but it can be a lonely and
sad. Yeah, you miss those who you've lost, you know.
Just, Yeah, you're right. And you think of other people and you think of family. And I mean, like, yeah, so that's a tradition we've always done, is mass. And I think we'll definitely do that.
It's a lovely way as well to just, especially for your children that might, you know, they mightn't remember these people, or they might have never, yeah, might have never met them, that you're kind of remembering them and talking about them. I think it's a lovely idea. What about then Christmas Day? Do you do all the cooking, Nevin?
Ah, come on, Wendy, of course I do.
The twins have to help with something. I'm sure they're doing some Christmas cookies or something like that with you.
They will be too busy with their gifts, and I'm going to give them Christmas Day off because they'll help me Christmas Eve. I'll get them peeling the vegetables, doing the potatoes. We're going to have roast goose Christmas because we have a lovely local producer, Thornhill Duck, a mile just from here. We're using their duck for over 31 years in Magnanes. And I'm going to slow roast the goose. I'm going to have it with red cabbage, a honey and clove sauce, and then I'm going to do some buttermilk brine turkey. So it's a breast of turkey. You soak overnight for 24 hours in buttermilk, garlic, sliced orange and rosemary. And then you lift it out of the buttermilk, you dry it off, you put some butter, smoked bacon. There's an enzyme in buttermilk that gives the turkey really succulent, really moist. It's the best recipe I've ever done. So I will be busy cooking.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio. Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.